This could be considered a track.
Right. Not really, though. We don't want to do that.
Like, it's beautiful.
This is a little intro, you know.
Brian?
All right, here we go. Countdown time.
1, 2, 3, go.
Okay, boys.
Do it!
Welcome back to Jokerman Podcast, the podcast about the Beach Boys. I'm Evan.
I'm Ian.
And today, following in the footsteps of a podcast that I was alerted to by a listener.
We're just going right into it. We're not even going to try to do any Beach Boys
shit.
No.
Well, in a sense, this is Beach Boys shit.
Sure. That's fair.
We, as listeners understand well now, we've covered the Beach Boys song Chug-a-Lug,
which is setting the internet on fire after the premiere episode of Jokerman Podcast, obviously featured on the Beach Boys album Surfin' Safari.
Jokerman Nation has Chug-a-Lug fever.
That's right. Everyone is heading down to the root beer stand to get their best buy.
And so we followed suit.
We sure have.
Today I went to Galco's. Have you ever been there?
Stocked up already. I haven't, no.
Well, Galco's is in Highland Park, and it's a very famous, it's like an old supermarket, and they now, I think it used to just be a classic old supermarket. It now is basically just beverages and candy, but like mostly beverages from all over the
world.
What else
do you need?
You can also get sandwiches in the back.
It sounds like that stupid fucking store that used to be there on Thousand Oaks Boulevard. Do you remember that one? Rocket Fizz?
Rocket Fizz, yeah.
Novelty sodas and old school candy and stuff?
Yeah, but this is better. This is more respectable.
Okay, sure. Yeah, it sounds like
it's been there for many. It's like a multi-generational company.
It's the original Rocket Fizz.
Yeah, like there's like some old timers who have worked there for many years, and I think it's a family run thing. And anyway,
all right.
Galco's is great. And I went and I got like 12 different root beers, something like that. There's a root beer podcast that listener Tim told me about. Tim Swadling,
I
said.
I believe it's defunct at this point, right?
Yeah.
It's no longer publishing.
They haven't published an episode since 2022, but I was listening to it. It's two very nice Midwestern fellows. I think they're brothers-in-law, and they talk about root beer.
Brothers-in-law is kind of the funniest relationship to have for a podcast. Not brothers, but brothers-in-law.
That's right. And a root beer podcast, no less. So anyway, my root beer is getting cold here, but I figured that we would try...
You mean hot?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting hot.
You got to get one of these. Glass of ice, dog.
I don't want to dilute it. Are you crazy?
Keep it nice and frosty.
For this, we need to just figure out what the notes are purely without any dilution. And so what we have is today it's a little unfortunate because we didn't coordinate perfectly, and so I don't have the same root beer as Ian, but we are doing what's the name of this segment?
Jokerman Podcast Root Beer Report.
I guess, okay, the Root Beer Report.
Beer mug, everybody chug a mug.
What do you have on deck, Ian?
I've got an IBC root beer, which claims that it's been around since 1919 in a nice little glass bottle here. I got 12 ounces made with real cane sugar, 160 calories per bottle. Seems like a nice classic root beer to start off. Someone on Twitter was recommending this brand to us. I've never had it, so I'm looking forward to trying it. What do you have today?
I've got Sprecher.
That's another one that I've seen floating around there.
Which is, I believe it's from Wisconsin.
Midwest excellence.
Yeah, Glendale, Wisconsin.
Beautiful Glendale.
Beautiful Glendale.
The Americana in Wisconsin.
It's got real, real hardcore fans. Made with honey.
Honey? Interesting.
Antioxidant. It says natural antioxidant.
Really?
Fire brewed craft soda.
Wow.
I've heard really positive things about Sprecher. This is what the bottle looks like.
Oh, that's interesting. It's got sort of like a German, like a Germanic type of...
Sprecher.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they are a German family.
And it's got like the shield type of thing.
With a griffin.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's...
I'm going to try mine and you try yours.
Okay. Bottoms up. Chug a lug.
Yes.
Hmm.
So How's it over there for you? I mean, it's like we're not drinking the same root beer.
I'm guessing that they probably taste pretty similar.
I don't think that the listeners are going to accept what you just said.
Hmm.
The thing about root beer and what makes that podcast, Root Beer Radio, fun to listen
root
to
beer radio.
Is I do think of all the types of soda, root beer, I think that there's a lot of room for variation because the history of root beer is really just kind of free form. It was like people making these concoctions. Everybody had their own recipes.
Tonics and such.
Yeah, out of roots and barks and whatever.
I believe it's traditionally made using the root bark of the sassafras tree.
That's one of the things. Yeah, sarsaparilla as well. And all those sassy plants. And yeah, they were called small beers. That was the category of drink.
Oh, interesting.
It's like the archaic form of soft drink.
Sure. Yeah, this was a forerunner to the soft drink. I'm seeing now that since saffron, a key component of sassafras, was banned.
Carcinogenic.
By the US FDA. That's right. Due to its carcinogenity, most commercial root beers have been flavored using an artificial sassafras flavoring. But a few, such as Hansen's, use a saffron-free sassafras extract. Is that one of the ones that you got, Hansen's?
No. Let's see what I got.
We're going to have to source that.
I gave you my haul earlier.
There was one called Dad's, I remember.
Well, there's Dad's. Yeah, I've known...
Dad's root beer.
I know about Dad's root beer. I've seen that before. There's Dad's, there's Frosty, there's Dog and Suds, there's Sprecher. There's one called Dublin, Texas root beer. There's Oh So Good Butterscotch root beer. And then there's Sioux City root beer. And then there's Empire root beer.
Empire. Interesting. Is that from like New York or something?
I guess. I don't know.
The Empire State's favorite root beer.
I have to wait for another day. But I'll tell you that I really am enjoying the Sprecher
here.
You
like the Sprecher?
It's full bodied. It's not very highly carbonated. It's smooth. Very round on the palate.
Mm.
It's sweet. It does have a honey note. And yeah, it seems like it's a great root beer. This would be excellent with some ice cream as a float.
Oh, float. I love a root beer float. See, I wish I should have, what I should have done, and maybe I will correct this for the future, is I wish I had a control root beer in addition to this nice root beer, like a bottle of Barks or A&W or something like the mass produced.
A&W is probably maybe the most. We should just get a control root beer in the mix.
Just so we can understand, really, because we're coming into this as relative root beer novices. You know, we really want to understand the quality and characteristics of these artisanal American root beers.
We're really just starting this journey of root beer sommeliers.
That's right. Just as we started the podcast not really knowing anything about Bob Dylan, and then we figured it out as we went along, we're starting the Jokerman Podcast Root Beer Report not knowing anything about root beer.
Yeah.
And presuming that we'll figure it out.
But I'm really glad that we're returning to this subject because I remember we had a lot of fun doing soda talk when we...
It was on the Ion Pack episode.
Yeah, the Ion Pack episode.
We did a lot of the Coke, like the weird random Coke flavors.
Coke Life, yeah.
That's right.
And Coke Dream.
There's a new one. Have you tried the new one, Coke Spice?
No, Matt told me about Coke Spice. He said it was
not that good.
He said it was kind of good.
It tastes like vanilla Coke. That's the problem with all the special Coke flavors. They all just basically taste like vanilla Coke. The Coke Space one or the Coke, whatever it was, Intergalactic Coke.
Yeah, I remember.
Galaxy or something. That was a good one. It tastes like bubblegum, but all the other ones basically taste the same.
It did taste like bubblegum. Tell me more about IBC. Like what is the company? Mm-hmm. What is IBC? What does it even stand for?
That's a great question. I assume they stand for root beer. Let's see. IBC Root Beer is an American brand now owned by, it's owned by Dr. Pepper. Oh, well. Stands for Independent Breweries Company, which was a defunct syndicate, is a defunct syndicate that was founded in St. Louis, Missouri. And they made root beer. It was founded by the Grisediak family. And this is what, look at that.
Is this dark? Is mine darker than yours? No.
I don't think so. Although, you know, I'm looking at it now. Maybe it's just because there's ice in mine and there isn't in yours. I feel like mine's got more of a red color to it and yours seems to me a little cool.
More of a brown.
A little more blue-green. Well, I think the brown is understood. But we're talking about shades here.
Kind of a brown color.
Yeah, sort of. I'm getting brown. This root beer is giving brown.
You're right about it being slightly more on the green side.
Yeah. So as of July 2016, IBC reformulated its beverages using cane sugar in place of high fructose corn syrup. Is Spreckers corn syrup or is it cane sugar?
So it's carbonated water, glucose syrup. So that's a sugar syrup, not a corn syrup.
Not a corn syrup.
Unless, who knows how they, that might be a vague sort of term. Hmm. Maltodextrin, raw honey, up there, very, very high in the list. Natural and artificial flavors, and then some preservatives and bullshit.
Sure. Yeah. I got carbonated water, cane sugar, caramel color, sodium benzoate, natural and artificial flavors.
Yeah. I've got the benzoate too.
Yeah. But you got to have the benzoate.
This one is, I don't even want it. The thing that I'm kind of scared about all of this is like, I don't drink that much just sugary soda. I'm usually just not drinking.
Yeah, you don't want to keep sugar soda in the house these days. I think back to my childhood sometimes, and like we would just go to the grocery store and just get a 12 pack
of
the can, like a rack of Coke, and that just drink that in like 2 days or something. That seems preposterous to me now.
It is. I mean, I feel kind of crazy drinking this because it's so sweet. And I don't really want to look at how much sugar is
yours is sweet and interesting, because I was going to say mine is not terribly, the IBC is not terribly sweet to me, like certainly compared to a Pepsi, right? Or a Dr. Pepper or something like that. This has got, it's got a little tang, it's got a little bitter note to it.
Well, that is kind of the thing about the root beers, is that some of them do have, I think, more of a medicinal or herbal quality, and some are more vanilla and sort of baking spices,
more cream soda type of thing.
Yeah. There's a kind of range. This one, I mean, it's sweet, but it's not like, it's not undrinkably sweet, but it's,
it might
definitely
be the honey in there.
It's definitely the honey, I think. But I think that I might be more inclined to like some of the more herbal ones down the line, but I feel like with no real thing to balance off of, except for having had an A&W the other week, I like this better than the A&W for sure.
Sure. Yeah. This IBC, as far as I can tell, best root beer I've ever had. 3 stars.
I want to give this one 2 stars out of 3.
That's fair. Give yourself some room to grow. I never really liked the root beer growing up, because I think it has that typically that little more bitter, herbaceous note that, you know, as a youngster, I didn't have the developed palate necessary for it. I needed to drink the Coca-Cola, the Pepsi-Cola. But now in my older age, as a wiser man, I'm digging this root beer. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, next time maybe I'll just get an IBC.
Get an IBC. I'll get a Sprecher, and we'll turn the tables.
And then after that, maybe we can try to just have the same one on deck.
Our cycles will align.
Yeah,
we got to get an A&W, and we got to get a Barks also.
Yeah, I think I've been I've been doing a lot of reading about this and watching videos. I think Barks is considered the better of the mass produced.
Interesting. So A&W is kind of the shit. That's the RC Cola of root beer.
I don't know. I mean, first of all, I think RC Cola has its fans.
Wow.
Second of all, I don't know. I think that it's the Bud Light. It's just like the Coors, you know.
I see. So just like basic, generic, plain type of root
Barks
beer.
Versus A&W is like Coors versus Budweiser. Or maybe one of them is like a Modelo. I don't know.
Huh. Well, I wonder if it's going to be a Coke-Pepsi type thing, because obviously, I mean, Coke, far superior to Pepsi, and Pepsi's got that really cloying, super sweet note that Coke, fortunately, typically does not, unless you're drinking a specialized cola. I wonder if Barks and A&W, there's also Mug root beer.
Right, there's
one of them
Mug.
Is like, I think their mascot is like a...
It's a
like
bulldog.
A bulldog.
Like a cartoon bulldog, yeah.
That's good, I like that.
There's a lot of mascots.
I wonder if one of them is more sugary sweetie than the other ones.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see that. Some of these
we'll
have crazy little guys on them. Like Frosty has a little, like, he's like an elf-like Santa Claus-looking character. But
I just
he's on all the bottles.
What about Frosty?
He's just on every bottle, so it's not...
On all of them.
They make all kinds of stuff.
I just Googled, like, A&W versus Barks root beer, and the first thing that came up is a Reddit thread that says, out of A&W, Barks, and Mug, which is your favorite? And the first post is from user Captain Cock, who says, average A&W fan, and then in quotations, so, like, this is a statement of the average A&W fan. Average A&W fan, according to Captain Cock, I'm a fucking retard.
8 upvotes.
43 replies.
A&W is the best from the restaurants. Mug is for peasants. Barks, Babby, B-A-B-B-Y, that shit has bite.
Oh, man.
Barks is the best, in all caps. A&W second, Mug. Who the fuck drinks that? Oh, somebody's riding for IBC.
Yeah, I see. IBC number one.
Somebody's like, number one, IBC. And then you got another comment. Yes, IBC.
Yes. All right, slay. I'm glad I started off with IBC. That was just the nice looking root beer that was available in my local Safeway. Boy, we thought we were getting in trouble with the Beach Boys because there's a bunch of psycho Beach Boys fans. Turns out the real psychos that we're going to be contesting are the root beer drinkers of the internet.
I'm a fucking mug maniac. Wow.
Never mug. If I was dying in the desert and I stumbled upon a river flowing with mug, I'd die.
Bark babies are immature retards and can personally eat my nuts.
Oh, man.
These are quotes.
These are quotes. Yes, these are not Jokerman podcast statements. We don't endorse any of these statements necessarily.
You dumbass, mug is superior.
Thus concludes Jerkman Podcast Root Beer Report number one.
I cannot wait for the next one.
I can't wait for number two. Here a mug, there a mug, everybody chug a mug. This episode of Jerkman Podcast is presented by DistroKid. Over 1 million artists rely on DistroKid to distribute their music and get it into all of the places it needs to go. Your Spotify's, your Apple Music's, your YouTube's, your TikToks, your Tidal's, your Instagram's, and any other streaming service of note. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy, with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100%, that's right, 100, all of them, folks, of their royalties and earnings. DistroKid comes with tons of great features, including Mixia, which allows DistroKid users to put the finishing touches on their tracks in just minutes, getting a customizable and polished end result that anyone can feel confident in before sharing it with the world. The DistroKid app is available now on iOS and Android. So go to the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store to download it today. Thank you, everyone, for indulging us there. Welcome to the Little Deuce Coupe episode, which is the second free public episode.
Oh, no.
hopefully we haven't scared too many new listeners away. Everyone on the Patreon team, I assume this is exactly the kind of shit you're signed up for. So, you know, you're welcome. we're here to talk about the Beach Boys' third and final LP of the year, 1963, Little Deuce Coupe, a record that came out literally 3 weeks after the record that came out just before it, Surfer Girl.
So to be clear, their fourth album.
Their fourth album.
Third of
their second year, 1963. That's how the numbers line up there.
We were talking last time about how there seemed to be an enormous pressure behind the group at this point for churning out records, as you can clearly see by the frequency they were doing it. And I contended that this led to diminishing returns in terms of the sense of overall quality as an album. I mean, I don't know. I just was being kind of devil's advocate for certain things.
No, you don't say.
Well, you got, you know, sometimes I have to say something, you know, slightly unconventional opinion wise, just to get things moving. But
sure,
I felt that Surfer Girl was kind of a mixed bag, and Little Deuce Coupe Man, I mean, it's literally like they didn't have enough songs, so they just put songs they already...
It is a recycled bag.
It's not even... It's yeah, it's just some of the same... Somebody who didn't buy candy for this year's trick-or-treaters, they just keep using the same candy.
Right, it's the bag of Hershey's Kisses that you bought 3 years ago and that no one ever wants to take.
Petrified, like chocolate dust on all the chocolate.
Right, yes. Well, that's why we needed to spin our wheels for 20 fucking minutes on this episode talking about root beer, because a full four of the songs on this 12-song album are songs that we've already talked about on the previous episodes, Little Deuce Coop, 409, Shut Down, and Our Car Club. So maybe we'll have more to say about the songs maybe. When we encounter them. Maybe we won't. But I do like this record, and I think it's interesting and fun because it is the first, like, really, it's one of the first concept albums.
Well, I mean,
concept albums of
it's
all.
It's a themed album.
Yeah, it's more themed than conceptual, but it is literally all about cars.
Yeah, well, they did also have one all about surfing, if you recall.
I guess so. But some of those songs, I mean...
One or two, arguably.
Yeah, but there were a couple songs on Surfer Girl and a couple songs on Surf and Safari, obviously, as we well know, Chug-a-Lug, that weren't about surfing. I'm failing to remember if there was anything on surfing...
Farmer's Daughter.
That's right. See? So this is it. This is the first fully themed 100% combo.
It's true. And In My Room on Surfer Girl, you know, has nothing to do with... surfing.
It's about coming home and being depressed after surfing.
Or never going out.
Or never actually surfing and just being at home and being depressed.
So yeah, you're right. This one has only car-themed songs, and I agree that that makes it a better record in a way. And I don't know why. I mean, I like that. I like that it's consistent. I like the cover is nice.
The cover's great, absolutely. It's it's got a little bit of like graphic design to it, I think. Finally, in the Beach Boys record oeuvre, which they're going to go on to have some of the great covers of all time. But these first couple ones, you know, Surf and Safari and Surfer Girl in particular, not the most creative efforts. And Surf in USA is barely, it's just a picture of a guy on a surfboard. Like, it's stock footage. But this is got, you know, I like the 3-2 on either side, kind of tilted on 90 degrees. And then that strong, bright red Little Deuce Coupe.
What's the 3-2
word stamp? The Deuce Coupe, right? The titular Little Deuce Coupe,
right,
is a hot rod from 1932.
Oh,
it's
yes,
a Ford Coupe from the year 1932.
Old Betsy, right? Isn't that?
Well, we don't know if Old Betsy is a.
Doesn't
Little
he say
Coupe.
That
we know the Little Deuce Coupe is? Do they say that she was born in 32?
I think so.
Oh, all right. Well, then there we go. That's sticking with the theme right there.
Yeah,
but we'll get there. We'll get to Old Betsy in a second. It's nice. I like the purple Beach Boys. I like the blue car. It's cool. My next door neighbor, I realized, has a car that looks exactly like this. That's just like sitting on his driveway all the time, and he's always out there tinkering on it. I've never actually seen him drive it, but he's having a ball, just hanging out, like getting up in the guts and taking things out and putting them back in.
Cool.
Maybe we'll get him on the podcast. It seems like a cool life, you know, being a guy who just tinkers with a hot rod.
Yeah. I'm actually, it's funny, I'm in the market for a car right now, so I've been looking at a lot of cars.
You're looking at hot rods?
Yeah.
You're going from your, what did you have?
A mini. I had a Mini
Your
Cooper.
Mini Cooper to your hot rod.
Yeah. It was a Mini Cooper Sport, so, you know, it was a two-door. I could just, like, lean really hard into that and just get one of these little death machines.
Yeah, just cruise down Sunset Boulevard in your little Deuce Coupe.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe I should just get a little convertible coupe or something.
That would be cool.
But yeah, I like the cover. It's got the prominently and fittingly the car front and center.
Sure,
and
just
like you see a cut off just the torso of a fella in a red jacket. Who knows? Perhaps he looks like another certain famous fella in a red jacket
we'll get to later. Yeah, it's nice. It's fine. It's Little Deuce Coupe. It's good. The cover. I do like the just concept behind it also, though, beyond it being a themed record. But like this, as we've talked about before, like we're at the kind of germinal stages of the record, the LP, the album as a medium here. So it's still very much in the process of being invented. Little do scoop, this record that is themed top to bottom car songs, but contains almost 50% recycled material, like it sort of predicts a future that didn't actually come to pass where like you could just sort of like repackage and represent existing catalog songs according to whatever math, whatever formula you wanted to, and then just like put them out there and sell them to people. Like maybe there were people who loved cars, but they didn't like surfing. And so they never gave the Beach Boys really a second thought. And now all of a sudden, hey, wait, the surfer band is a car band. I'm going to buy this record full of car songs, even though it's all the same shit, musically speaking, at the end of the day. That obviously didn't end up coming to pass, but it's a fascinating, tantalizing glimpse at a totally different style of like making and presenting and selling albums that could have been.
You could still do this today if you wanted to. You could just, and maybe more people should do that. Maybe that would revitalize the music industry.
You know, you could get a Bob Dylan album that's just like Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan animal songs. And, you know, it's like, you know, you get Man Gave Names to All the Animals, you get New Pony, you get mm-hmm. Cats in the Well. Mm-hmm.
But then you get some other new ones, but he recycle all the
ones. You get like
ones.
Two or three new ones, yeah, but mostly it's just songs that you listened to and didn't like 20 and 30 years
well,
ago.
Well, actually, the Beach Boys did that really soon after this with Pet Sounds. That's a record that's all about different animals and pets.
That's right. But those were all new ones. There were no recycle. Yeah. Yeah, man. I don't like the surf music. I don't like the car music, but pets, animals?
Yeah.
Now you're talking.
Yeah.
This band might be for me after all.
Okay, so we start talking about
I guess we
got to
start talking about it at some point.
Okay, Little Deuce Coupe. I don't really... It's 1 minute and 40 seconds.
We talked about
Little Deuce Coupe.
It's a great song. Yeah, I mean, it's Little Deuce Coupe. Come on. You know Little Deuce Coupe.
You don't know what I've got.
You don't know what I got, but you do know the Little Deuce Coupe.
Okay, so Ballad of Old Betsy. This is part of the Little Deuce Coupe expanded universe because mm-hmm. actually, as we just referred to a moment ago, the year... 1932 is name checked right at the top. She was born in 32.
And was she ever pretty? She rode a freight train west all the way from Detroit City.
Detroit City. So really what we have here is a romantic ballad about a car.
A car.
Ballad of Old Betsy. And it's about the life cycle of a car.
Yes.
And the romance that you have with a car through its life.
I honestly love this song. I think this is, I mean, it's a preposterous song and laughable from a certain angle. But to me, there's this just unmistakable beauty and an actual romance to it, to be honest. Like, I totally buy, not that these guys necessarily felt this way at this time, but that someone could feel this way.
Oh, I mean, no doubt people feel this way about their cars.
The thing with this is that it's not even a car that you keep, that the singer keeps all the way through its life. It's a car that's been bought and sold and bought and sold. And now finally, this is the last owner of the car who's gotten it kind of in its state of faded glory. It's all rusted mm-hmm. up, but it's still solid gold to him. She may be rusted iron, but to me, she's solid gold.
I like it.
It's great.
It's a sweet sounding song. It has like kind of a dewy-eyed melancholy. I like Ballad of Old Betsy.
Betsy took some beatings, but she never once complained.
You know, when I was listening the first time, I was
you
like...
You didn't realize it was about a car?
I didn't. And then I was like, what the fuck?
It's like he hit me and it felt like a kiss.
Yeah.
But it isn't.
It's not.
This is a car. It's not a girl. It's a car.
Everything else that they say about the car just feels exactly like, you know, it could be serenading a beautiful woman. And then you get to that line. And then thankfully, we're just talking about, we're not talking about a human being.
It's an old car. And vocally, the arrangement on this is fantastic. They're doing this sort of four freshmen, like barbershop quartet type thing.
Yeah, this whole record has like a more of a throwback feel.
Yeah, very much so.
a lot of it sounds more 50s.
Yes.
I think knowingly.
I think a lot of this music is designed to sell to the people to whom these experiences are familiar. The surfing shit, as we've covered, that was this exotic, exciting, brand new, cutting edge teenage culture that was really only available on the golden shining coast way out west that, you know, most people didn't have access to. But the car shit, you know, not everyone was riding hot rods and doing drag races, but the 50s is the car decade in American culture. It's when, you know, the interstate highway system goes in and suburbanization really begins in large part. This is more kind of taking it home and like putting it into terms and examples that listeners in Wisconsin and Texas and Alabama or whatever are going to be a little more familiar with.
Well, that's kind of how cars and car culture works. You know, every car has, well, not every car, but a lot of famous cars are meant to suggest a kind of lifestyle that has nothing necessarily to do with where you live. Like, there's so many people who buy a truck who will never see a job site.
Sure, sure.
There's so many people who buy a convertible who are never going to take it down the Pacific Coast Highway. There's people who have Subarus who don't go camping or with the trunk open while they like roast marshmallows with their kids or whatever they do in those commercials. It's just the idea that you might is what you're getting when you buy certain cars.
It's aspirational.
It's like, I'm the kind of person who would do that. And I think the Woody and the Hot Rods kind of have a potent version of that attached to them.
Yeah, there's a cultural valence to all of them, certainly. And, you know, the little Deuce Coupe we start with, that's that sexy hot rod. And now all of a sudden we're into this old rust bucket that you still can't help but love with old Betsy.
Well, the next song is the, I guess, wild card.
Right. I guess this one is not really a car song. So,
it's straight up not.
Yeah. But I guess what, you know, how do you get to school? You don't take the school bus and you don't walk because you live in the suburbs and the school is too far away. You might drive your car in order to be true to your school.
I knew the version of this song that was, that's the single version.
Right.
Which did that came out later or?
I think it came out later. Yeah. And it has the backing vocals from the Honeys.
Yeah. The, cheerleader.
Sound like cheerleaders, exactly.
And also it's just pitched down and it's faster and its instrumentation is a little bit tighter. I really like that version just because that's the one I know of Be True to Your School.
Sure.
But I like all versions. I love this song.
It's fantastic. To me, this is the best song on this record, and it does not stand up to the best songs on the previous records. You know, it's not an In My Room and it's not a Surfing USA. But, it, you know, it's absolutely part of this early Beach Boys canon, these innocent beyond belief at moments songs from these wide-eyed teenagers that just sound like they are written by the Mickey Mouse Club, but at the same time are undeniable bangers.
Yeah. I must say, though, that the single version just hits a lot harder. Like, and I didn't even realize how different they were until I put them side by side, like someone might do with two different root beers.
Mm.
But the intro to the version on Little Deuce Coupe is a lot looser. Like,
it's a little shaggy.
The whole thing is kind of shaggy.
When some heartbreaker tries to put me down and says it's good.
It feels pretty loose. Whereas the other version, the single, to me, one of those moments where in the first 2 seconds, I'm just like, oh, hell yeah. Like, this just sounds like the curtain rising and the lights going down.
When some loud bragger tries to put me down and says his school is great, I tell him right away, now what's the matter, buddy? Ain't you heard of my school? It's number one in the state.
And this version has a little bit less drama, but it's still good.
And that's maybe why, yeah, that's why I think I like the Deuce Coupe, the album version, better than the single version. It sounds just more like a song that these guys got in the studio together and just cut, you know, imperfections and warts and all. The single version, fantastic. You know, it's all great. But there's almost like a marching band show tune quality to it that is lacking here on the album that I just like, you know, it's a little looser. It's a little more Hangdog.
Yeah.
But it still has that just sugary, sappy, sweet innocence seeping through the pores endlessly.
That thing of it being like slightly more emotional than it needs to be, like, right. Winter colors.
It's incredible.
I mean, I guess being true to one's school, like, I think this was kind of like a weird concept to me when I first heard the song.
I mean, it's very foreign to anyone who is normal today.
Unless you go to like private school.
Well, indoctrinate. That's exactly what I just said. People who are normal.
Yeah. Neither of us went to private school.
That's right.
So
do you feel like you've been true to the old Agora High School?
Yeah, sure.
Good.
Let
the blue and gold fly.
Yeah. Rah, 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 rah. What is it?
Yeah, rah, 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 sis, rah. Sis, sis, do, de, wah.
No, it's something sis, boom, sis, boom, ba.
Sis, boom, ba, I
what
think.
What the hell
yeah.
is that?
You know, maybe it's from Hawthorneheim. The song is apparently a rewrite of On Wisconsin, which is the state song of the state, Wisconsin. And I think Hawthorne High had stolen it from that, you know, initially. And then when the Beach Boys were doing this song, they stole it from Hawthorne. So it's this weird, you know, Midwest by way of South Bay theme. I do got to say, I love the mic vocal here. You know, I'm much more of a Brian fella in general, but that kind of reedy, whiny quality to his voice is so appropriate, I think, in this song in particular. And the way that his vocals are double tracked on the album version and it's kind of out of sync with one another.
Yeah.
Like there's just like an innocence and a naivete that it is partially intended, I think, but also just not. Partially not intended, just natural, comes natural with to the music.
We're gonna smash him now.
Exactly.
I see a sis boom ba as the characteristic sound made by fireworks. Totally true, actually. Boom ba.
Boom ba. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Anyway, I loved Be True to Your School.
Yes, it's fantastic. I would also recommend anyone out there to look up the Genius annotations on this one, because someone has just gone wild on this page with the most like asinine.
What could they possibly be saying?
Dog brain statements about what's going on.
Right
here.
Away, the song begins in a meterless form. The beat is indiscernible, which creates a sense of anticipation and makes one pay attention to the lyrics. There are two competing voices singing the same lyrics, but slightly out of sync, adding to the offbeat feeling and the sense of anticipation. Wow, this is like for people for the deaf?
It seems like someone just plugged in, like, explain this song to me to ChatGPT and then pasted the results in.
Not even.
By invoking some loud braggart, a clear antagonist is established, someone who is promoting a rival school. The word choice is a bit childish and invokes the condescension two students have of each other since they attend competing schools. It harkens listeners back to their days of high school and is meant to draw on fond memories of school pride.
Yeah, these are all true things.
Car crazy cutie.
Car crazy cutie.
I think it's great. I mean, like at the beginning, because he's just doing Do Run Run. Like it's literally just Do Run Run in the beginning. And then they, you know, kind of twist it halfway into a different song here for the rest of the thing. But it's clearly it's the Do Run Run. And it's not the same exact melody necessarily, but it is like, you know, you listen, it's the Do Run Run. And then they go on to sing a song about a girl who's really into cars, a car crazy cutie, which I didn't really put it together until coming back to this time. You know, Car Crazy Cutie was not one of the Beach Boys songs with which I was most familiar, but it does anticipate a legendary late era Beach Boys song in sort of the inverse direction. Do you know what I'm talking about here?
What do you mean?
Is this one they're singing admiringly about a girl who's into boy shit. They think it's cool. We'd love to have a Car Crazy Cutie.
Right.
Later on another song, a few albums down the line, they're going to be taking the opposite standpoint with regards to a tomboy,
Hey,
little dumb boy.
Yeah.
The song in which they attempt to basically detransition a potentially genderqueer young woman. You know, it's a delightful prequel to that song that, you know, we don't necessarily endorse the actions and statements of Hey Little Tomboy.
Or F the Beach Boys at all.
Yeah, pretty much anything any of them ever did.
Being a car crazy cutie is, you know, this is exactly the type of song that should be on here. So here it is.
Absolutely. I'd also like to point out once again on the Genius page, I'm assuming that this annotation was added not by the guy who wrote all of the ones on Be True to Your School, but this is just a very disgusting annotation and very rude, and I want everyone to go downvote it. At the end of verse 3, do you see, are you on the page there?
No.
Okay, well, at the end of the verse 3, it ends, it says, she likes to take them better clean and gap the plugs. And then if you click that, the Genius annotation just says, unfortunately for the singer, his girlfriend would rather gap her plugs than have him plug her gaps. Exclamation.
Excuse me?
Disgusting.
Vulgar.
Very, very disrespectful.
Gapping the plugs refers to the practice of opening spark plugs for car performance.
So. Cherry, cherry, coupe.
I like this one.
Mmm, it's about a red car. Mm.
Uh-huh. Yeah. To me, that's pretty cool. I was just sitting here, not necessarily thinking about a car. And now I'm thinking about not only a car, but one that's cherry red.
Sure. That's a great color.
Or candy apple.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the way that the song sounds with the, like, 'cause it's got a little bit of depth on the, with the harmony in an interesting way. It's just kind of like, do you know what I mean? If you slowed it down, like the way that this harmony is, if you slowed that, it would sound very reverent choral.
And it does. I mean, it sounds reverent and choral just the way that it, the way that it's being sung, because I mean, they are reverent towards these things. That's sort of the whole story of these early Beach Boys records, you know, is this sort of fascination and yeah, reverence is probably the right word, towards these totems of mid-century American culture. In this case, all these cars. In my room is this statement, this song about, you know, your own personal domicile in your detached suburban house. These things that are, in many cases, hopelessly out of reach to many of us in this day and age. There's this post-baby boom explosion of prosperity in America. And everyone is like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and just like looking forward to the future. Isn't this new consumer paradise great? Nothing is ever going to go wrong.
Yeah.
Cherry, cherry coupe now.
It's songs like these that grease the wheels.
They sold the American dream.
Yeah, man. Really. I mean, it makes it sound pretty good. It's a beautiful song.
We'll get there again in another couple songs down the line on this record.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite, probably.
Oh, that one's... good one.
Next we got 4-9. We've already talked about it. She's so
we've
fine.
Talked about 4-9.
Shut down, already talked about it. Tack it up.
Shut down. Tack it up. Tack it up.
Pink Slip Daddy.
That's right.
Okay. Spirit of America. The Spirit of America itself.
I was not aware of this. This is a very specific, detailed story that they are pretty much just relating, you know, factually in the lyrics here. I was not aware of any of this shit. Were you?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, cool.
So let's elucidate.
The Spirit of America, the titular topic of this song, is a, I guess it's technically a car, but not really a car. It's like a jet-propelled vehicle of some sort.
It was a record-breaking speed achiever.
Yes, yes. It basically looks like a jet plane minus the wings with some wheels on it, created by Craig Breedlove here in 1962, 63, and he took it to the Bonneville Salt Flats out in, I think, Utah somewhere, and drove the car really fast and set the land speed record at that time, at least, over 400 miles an hour.
407.45.
Pretty good.
The man who would drive her, Craig Breedlove by name, a daring young man, played a dangerous game.
Mm.
With a J-47, a jet for his power. Craig Breedlove had averaged 407 per hour. Both man and machine had given fair warning. They'd set a new record on that warm August morn.
This is a jet without wings. It rests now on four Goodyear tires. But soon, you will see it race across the salt flats of Bonneville and shatter the world's land speed record. For this is Craig Breedlove's car, the Spirit of America.
Right, they love the car. They love the car that goes fast. I don't know.
Yeah, you gotta go. Hey, look, we have to show respect. Kiss the ring of the fastest car.
That's right. If we're gonna write a whole album about cars, you know, we got a cool car to start. We got an old car that we kind of love. We got a red car.
Mm.
How about the fastest car?
Yeah, just take your hat off. Here. Put it right over your heart.
And we're even going to have a song that's about the slowest car in a few minutes.
That's right. Next, after Spirit of America, is Our Car Club, which we've already talked about. Song about making a car club and all the things that go into making any kind of club.
Yes, yes. See our discussion of our car club on the Surfer Girl episode last week on Patreon. We're working a little blue on that one. I love Spirit of America, though. Just want to re-register that. The harmonies, the backing vocals, the oohs, the ahs. It's this very romantic, nostalgic
doo-wop
take on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, doo-wop, exactly. I can't even impersonate this, but when Brian goes up, the Spirit of America, it's like, oh, man, that's wild. And they're going to end up, you know, obviously putting out the Spirit of America compilation in the 70s, the sequel to Endless Summer, and this song becomes something more of a greatest hit of theirs, although I think it's still, you know, kind of not deep cut necessarily, but one level down. Take us back to those days when someone could just be like, you know what, I want to make the fastest car, and then you could do it, and then have the Beach Boys write a song about it.
Definitely still happening. I mean, what is the current land speed record?
I don't know. I feel like you can't go much faster than 400 miles an hour.
You'd be wrong, man.
Would I?
1997. The Thrust SSC, driven by Royal Air Force pilot Andy Green. This guy was going 763 miles per hour.
760 miles an hour. Jesus.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, if you look at the vehicle, you can maybe understand why. It literally has two enormous jet engines on either side.
Okay. All right. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is... Okay. Well, wow. That looks pretty cool, to be honest. It's like a spaceship, but a car.
Yeah. So, you know, for a certain type of guy, this is the whole point. This is,
yes,
that's what you want to do.
Oh, interesting. I'm looking at the wiki page for land speed record, and there's actually two different categories for records. There's the wheel driven era, which runs from 1898 to 1964.
Oh.
And then there's a second separate era, 1963 to present, which is the jet and rocket propulsion era.
I see.
Craig Breedlove was the first to do the jet-powered rocket car.
Ah.
Yeah. It seemed too fast for me. You know, I'm good at a good, you know, 65, 70, maybe 75. We talked about Our Car Club. Now how about No Go Showboat?
It's about a car that sucks.
A car that looks cool but is really shitty. 65,000 plays on Spotify. As far as a Beach Boys song goes, that's like, you know, might as well be 10. Little Deuce Coupe has 23 million.
Yeah. She's just for fun, not for drags.
That's right.
So yeah, I guess it's not really about a car that sucks. It's just about recognizing that there is a conflict here between...
There's many different types of
aesthetic
cars.
Appreciation and appreciation based on speed, form, and function all in one.
Right.
There's a range of ways to love a car.
The engine compartment's filled with chrome goodies in my no-go showboat, but everybody takes me, even old Ford Woodies.
Yeah, I like the end. It says even the ice cream truck. I'm even shut down by the ice cream truck.
Nothing could be more embarrassing.
In case you didn't know, ice cream trucks are known for being frustratingly slow.
Mm, interesting.
So you can only imagine how fast this no-go showboat can go.
This is the same guy from Be True to Your School.
Yeah.
This fucking guy.
You can only imagine that this no-go showboat is probably going quite slow if it's slower than an ice cream truck, which is notoriously a slow-moving car, a vehicle. Mm.
Thank you for letting us know. I just want to register no-go showboat, preposterous song, absolutely ridiculous on its face. Musically, it's a tour de force. This is maybe the most impressive song on the record to me.
Why?
They just launch into there isn't like an intro or a little melody. They just like, you know, you drop the needle on this and it's just no go showboat. It's like Catch a Wave or Hawaii to me, like we were talking about on the last one. It's the hand claps and stuff. You know, you don't even need the lyrics. Just sit back, put it on, and marvel at Brian being able to make a song that sounds like this.
When it comes to speed, man, I'm just out of luck. I'm even shut down by the ice cream truck.
The song goes fast, even though the showboat is a no-go.
Yeah. And then, we got kind of I guess we would call this the emotional core of this record.
The emotional climax.
Donald Turnipseed was found wandering around in a daze, but basically unhurt. James Dean died of a broken neck and became immortal.
A young man is gone.
A young man is gone. Yeah.
A song about the one and only, the legendary James Dean.
That's right. This is the single non-original musical composition on the record. It's a rewrite of a song by Bobby Troup.
There's a story told of a very gentle boy and the girl who wore his ring. Through the wintry snow, the world they knew was warm, for their hearts were full of spring.
Originally known as Their Hearts Were Full of Spring, but obviously the Beach Boys stole it. And this, I believe the Four Freshmen had sung that, and so the Beach Boys stole the Four Freshmen version and then obviously put their own lyrics to it. It's very affecting to me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it is. I love James Dean.
James Dean, yeah. It's like you were saying, it's a very 50s kind of record. It's very backward looking, even at this, you know, long ago date of 1963. Have you been by the James Dean's place of death?
Yeah, here in California? Salinas.
Yeah. No, it's not quite Salinas. It's south of Salinas. But it's at this weird kind of liminal space in between the 5 and the 101. It's like west of the 5, east of the 101, in this like up and down kind of chaparral type area. And there's a big gas station that you pass on the way there, where there's it's literally like
the
a
giant
foot
yeah,
James Dean cutout.
I drove exactly. by it on the way up to Big Sur.
Oh, so yeah. So you just saw it recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to drive by it all the time because when we're going to Grace's parents' place in Carmel, we would take that route. And then, yeah, a little ways down from that gas station, there's this three-way interchange. And you can honestly see it like coming up to it. I don't know if you went right by it the way that we used to, but like you can see how this particular area would be a place where another car just drives into you and annihilates you and ends your life. There's a little plaque and a state sign there about that being the place where he died. James Dean dying is like man walking on the moon in terms of like 20th century touch point moments, and it's just on this random highway in the middle of nowhere, California.
Yeah, that car is absolutely liquefied.
Yeah,
in those pictures. This feels like you're uncovering like the dusty tome of some kind of like boomer black magic. Like this is just so reverence is like the word that I think makes this whole record work in a way. There is kind of this deep solemnity and feeling of like cars aren't just for fun, you know. Actually, the greatest thing you can do is to pass away in a car because you love cars.
That's the best way to die.
He died as he lived. He was daring. He was a star.
Mm. Screaming tire, flashing fire, and gone was this young star.
Oh, how could they let him die? Still a young man is gone, yet his legend lingers on. For he died without a cause. And they say that he'll be known forevermore as the rebel without a cause.
Without a cause. It's a little weak on the rhyme
scheme, guys. Kind of drops the ball at the end there, for sure.
But I do love the fact that literally it ends on Rebel Without a Cause movie.
It's a little on the nose. I think you could have somehow ended it saying something, he died without a cause, being the last line. And it's like, okay, I get it. It's about James Dean.
No. I like that it ends with literally the title of the movie, Rebel Without a Cause. But you could have picked up a different word to rhyme in the initial line there. This is catnip to me. This is what the Beach Boys is all about. This just striking Gregorian chant-ass song about James Dean dying in a car.
I told you about Jimmy Angel, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, he has a song called Elvis in Maryland. Jimmy Angel is a great showman and performer.
He's at like Zebulon and stuff, right?
I saw him at Zebulon, but he plays regularly at the Smokehouse in Burbank. And
That's beautiful.
An older gentleman now, but I mean, he still does what he's always done, which is play rock and roll music. And his song Elvis in Maryland, I think, also mentions James Dean. That rebel, James Dean.
Mm.
This feels very Jimmy Angel. And sure. Jimmy Angelic.
For he died without a cause, and they say that he'll be known forevermore as the
once again, the Beach Boys sticking to their theme of just ending.
This is the
their
best
record,
part.
Their early records.
The funniest thing on the record is just that right after
like,
this,
that is such a perfect way to end this record. And then there's just like two more minutes of stupid ass music about cars
slapped in the air with
90 seconds of music. It's not literally 96 seconds long. Custom machine.
Check my custom machine.
Ridiculous.
That was the in memoriam segment. But now we've got to do the big finish.
It's not even the big finish, though, because like this song is like totally replacement level forgettable. Like it's in one ear and out another, and it's 96 seconds long. Like you don't even need this to be here. Make this an 11-song album. It doesn't need to be 12.
But I love that it's here. It provided me a genuine laugh.
Yes. No, it's beautiful. And from where we sit today, it's fantastic that this record ends on this note.
Well, it feels like somebody at Capitol was just like, we can't end on that note, on a downer note.
Yeah, it probably was.
Come
yeah.
on, you're telling me you don't have any other stuff we can just tack on at the end here? You got nothing else, huh? Oh, oh, you can't write another car song? Come on. You want everyone to be crying out there listening to your record? The last thing they hear is they're going to remember. And they're going to, I mean, this is all could be Murray Wilson too, for all we know. Just like, oh, you really want to end on a sorry note like that? Throw another car song in there. What are you, stupid?
What are you, a homo?
What, you think the last thing that they're all going to hear is that you were weepy-eyed about James Dean? Not my boys, not my sons. we haven't talked, I guess, you know, I wanted to at some point talk about Murray's musical aspirations.
We're gonna do an episode on the Murray album, The Many Moods of Murray Wilson. That's a whole episode.
When does that happen?
That's 1968, I think.
Okay.
After Brian kicked him to the curb, and after he had done Pet Sounds and stuff, and Murray was like, you know, that's an amazing record. My boys are stars. They're brilliant, once in a generation talents. But I gotta prove that I'm just as good.
The two step sidestep.
That's right.
That was his song that he
initial claim to fame.
Yeah, we played on the Lawrence Welk program.
I cannot believe what American culture was. The two step sidestep on the Lawrence Welk program, written by this like machine shop owner from Hawthorne, California. I can't believe any of this shit ever existed.
Well, it did, and
it did.
The children of those men. That's who made Custom Machine.
They're doing that two-step sidestep, then a whirl away two-step sidestep, took a man away two-step sidestep. What a gloomy day from that two-step Saturday night.
One star for Little Disco.
Yeah, 1 out of 3, not bad.
Pretty good. Jokerman.
If I had one wish, it would be this, to turn back the years to moments like this. Elvis and Marilyn were the king and queen. Can't forget that River James Dean. Oh, how I wish we could turn back the years to moments like this.
The 50s are the best, forget the rest.